Okay, we're going to start up. So when we finish step five, we always share about promises. Tonight's the promises in AA. We hear that all the time. There's lots of promises in other steps. When we come out of step five, we have fifth step promises. It says, once having taken the step withholding nothing, we're delighted. So assuming I let everything go in step five, one of the things that'll happen is feeling okay, delighted. Now these fifth step promises, my experience has been, they didn't happen to me as soon as I finished the fifth step. They happened to me six and seven, sometimes eight and nine. But the fuse has been lit, and we're about to be transformed once again. Yeah. It says, we can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. I remember after this happened, I was watching a ball game. I was watching a Knick game, and it was a Saturday afternoon. And I watched the entire game sitting alone in this apartment. Halftime, I had lunch. Game was over, and I realized, live life forward, understand it backwards. Oh my God, it happened. Usually, I would be on the phone, TV on, no sound, the radio playing, looking to do something. But I was able to be alone at perfect peace and ease, and what that has evolved to is I love being alone, not feeling lonely. I love being in my house as much as I travel. I'm really a homebody. I really dig being in the house and doing stuff, just going down to the beach. It was something that was not possible for me for a long time because I would hear the head would talk and I realized how loud it was. And if I was here, I should be there. If I was there, I should be there. If I was with her, I should be with her. If I had, I remember I was working as a dock worker, a longshoreman, and on my ride to work, I would see the express buses that they have in New York taking people from whatever borough they lived in to downtown Wall Street. And they were all suited up with suitcases, and I would sit in my car in work clothes saying, I should be like that. Well, I remember leaving this occupation for a short time and getting a job on Wall Street, and I'd be on that express bus seeing the construction guys going to work saying, I should be in construction, I should be doing that. Wherever I was, there I was, and it was never any good. I can never be okay in my own skin. It says our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now I begin to have a spiritual experience, albeit it might be the infancy of this experience and this relationship with God, but it's happening nonetheless. We've contacted, if you will, God. I will never, at this point, I will never be the same again. You can't. Once you taste the honey, you've tasted the honey. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. Now, for years in AA, people who were loving and kind, because no one ever tried to hurt me in AA, would tell me the following. It's normal to think about a drink if you're an alcoholic. Well, that's entirely true. That statement is entirely true. It's normal to think about a drink if you're an alcoholic. Yeah, but they've left out this part, and that is if you're untreated. Because according to my big book, if I begin to get treated and treated called recovered, the feeling that the drink problem, feeling of it disappearing will happen. And then when we get to step 10, it says the problem has been removed. It does not exist. Doesn't mean I'm cured. But what was on me when I got here is no longer on me. With me? Because now we're walking in the Spirit. If God is for me, who could be against me? I've understood that this self, this alcoholic me, lives only up in the head, never in the soul. And we begin to live from the soul. Not perfect, because I'll never be perfect, because I still have a mind that thinks. And I can't shut the thinking off. The peace of freedom is not getting hooked into every single thought that comes. Which is what I would do. And I'd be up and down and sideways all day long. I don't buy into that anymore. The reason why these thoughts have so much power, because I believe them to be true. What if, and I'll speak for myself, there are times where I get to a point where I feel like I have enough. What happens if we get to a point where I feel like we have enough? Meaning, I'm not the richest guy, but I have enough. I have a nice car. It's not right out of the showroom. It's enough. I don't live like in Beverly Hills in a mansion, but I have a nice place. That's enough. What if we got to a place where having enough filled the took care of the appetite? How much less noise in the head would be existing? I'm not the best looking person on the planet. I'm never going to be on the cover of a magazine cover, but it's okay. I'm never going to be on Muscle and Fitness and posing and showing off the six pack. It's really okay. I never went to college. It's okay. It's really okay. I don't mean just rolling over and saying, well, this is my lot in life, but just being okay with the deck of cards God has given me. Doesn't mean I don't strive to get better. But it's really okay. And the noise begins to dwindle. When I get okay with me and my own skin. When I'm spiritually fit, the drink problem will be removed. Still alcoholic. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. And that lends itself to hand in hand. If you grab my hand, there's no gap. I'm one with this power called God. Finally. And this is really necessary to get this, because it's going to show up in 6 and 7. Because when we get done with step 5, at the bottom of the page, it talks about, have I been thorough in step 5? It tells me what to do when I get done with step 5, is go home and be quiet for 1 hour. Find a quiet place. That may not be my den or my living room only, the quiet place in here. And for new folks, it doesn't mean we're doing selfies and going, just finished the 5th step. I see this all the time. It's a new thing on Facebook. Got 3 days back. You know. I'm dying to text or write somebody, I don't care. No headphones, you know, not listening to Snoop Dogg while I'm doing a 5th step, you know, quiet time. Nothing. It's just me and my God. And it might be uncomfortable because there's no distractions. Because for an hour, I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to review the first 5 proposals. I'm going to look at 1. Am I convinced? Am I look at 2? Am I still looking to go there? 3, am I still willing to turn everything over? 4, have I been completely thorough? To take it to the grave stuff, I put on paper. 5, I've shared everything. And that's what Bill is asking over and over and over again in different ways. I've sat in with lawyers a few times and things called depositions. And what lawyers tend to do is ask the same question 20 different ways to trick you. And at the end of the deposition, I'll ask a question he did on the front end just to see if he's telling the truth. Bill did the same thing here. Stones properly in place, water, whatever. He's just playing with the words, have you been thorough? Yes, I have. Move on. He didn't say perfect. But as thorough as God allowed me to be. And so during that quiet time, I would get some meditation time. Thanking God from the bottom of my heart that I know I'm better, looking at the first 5 proposals, okay, I've been pretty thorough. I've given everything to my sponsor, and then I go quiet. And one day what came out of that, two significant events in my life was 5, 6, and 7. One was, this prayer came to me, God spoke, kind of put this on my heart, and that was, God, save me from me. And it was profound because, you know, looking at it, I would say if events were different in my life, if people would have only done something different, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in. And I realized at this point, God just saved me from me, because that's the enemy. We talked about the death of self for successful living. Experience the death of self before the physical death. all necessary to be free. And I finished step five, and I went home for this quiet time, and somewhere in there, things began to change. And it started with me questioning everything about God, AA, the 12 steps, my sponsor, my life. I started to get filled with even like some skepticism about what is all this about anyway. I just told someone my entire life story. Where are we going with this? And I start to feel really uncomfortable physically. And you get that chest is vibrating and you're just really like a raw nerve. And I wasn't thinking about drinking, but I just felt like I was imploding. It was very, very uncomfortable. And I got to a point where I became so concerned, I called my sponsor. And Mark H. was my sponsor at the time. And this is about the third or fourth time going through the steps. And I called up Mark and I says, here's what's going on with me. I'm in this aisle quiet time and I'm having a meltdown. I don't believe anything anymore. And this is what he said. It went just like this. Sounds like you're having an experience. Hung up the phone. This is what you do to me. That's it? So I went back to prayer. What he told me he did was very significant. So I wanted my sponsor to sit with me and walk me through that and explain to me what was happening. It would have killed the experience. Silky walked in and saw Bill having a white light experience and said, just left him alone pretty much. It's better than what you had. Hold on to it. I'm out of here. If Bill was in a treatment center today, he would have got medicated in 2 minutes. Uh-oh. He's white lights. Medicate him. Emergency group. Yeah. But Bill didn't want to. I mean, my sponsor didn't want to take away the experience. He knew exactly what was going on. It's called the death of self for successful living. Everything was being brought down. All the structures I had built as to what I think AA is, what my life is, what everything's about, came tumbling down. It's called the death of self, and I'm left like a raw nerve. But what God does is replace it with a new set of conceptions and ideas, his. My wife didn't come home. She was out on a cocaine thing and alcohol. And when she finally walked in the door, the part of me, the husband part of me, the Brooklyn part of me, was ready to go to war of what you did to me. I have to stand up for my own manhood. It's what you do. There was a greater part of me, I never forget this, that I was hurt, I was upset. But for the first time, I saw her as one of us who had no choice over her life. I knew the marriage was over and I had to get out. But I wasn't looking at, how could you do this to me? Ugh. It was like, this woman is sick. I mean, she's really just one of us. She is where I left off. No sense of loyalty, no integrity. That's what happens to alcoholics. And God gave me new eyes to see that. This is right after this experience. And I call Mark with that. Because this is called being free. Seeing the all of God and everything. Seeing what God's love. Can I see? This is a tough one. Even the people I know despise me. Can I still see them the way God sees them? With his eyes. They just raised the bar up here. But it's worth taking the road up there anyway. It's got to be better than when I'm living. What's the price for freedom? Any price. And maybe I got a glimpse of that particular Sunday. And I took action, positive constructive action. There was a gentleman about it, and we parted ways. And I wasn't too happy when the judge gave her everything, you know. But you move on. If I was living life on life's terms, I would have handled that completely different. Life on God's terms, he allows me to handle it the way he would want to handle it. It's called freedom. And so I got to take a look at step six. And, you know, part of the healing is not denying my brokenness, but accepting and surrendering to my brokenness. Understanding I can't work on defects. I'm going to work on my defects. Good luck. I'm going to work on positive affirmations until somebody does me wrong. A lot of us, I know I did, had that one strong personality in your life. Usually we could be 50 years old and mama or dad still have play on you. Still have leverage on you. Oh, you're going to wear that? So you go change. You're still going there, so you don't. I had to get to a place where I was okay in my own skin. With all my brokenness and all the flawed character I have. But prior to that, people would have lots of leverage on me. What bondage? I would be in bondage to fads. You know, if everyone's wearing bell bottoms, you gotta have bell bottoms. Everyone's wearing straight pants, you gotta wear straight pants. If everyone's wearing this color, you gotta wear that color. God forbid I should show up with something that's out of fashion. You'll think less of me. That means you don't like me. That means you won't hang out with me. Oh my God, I'm gonna die. So I'm serving, and nowadays we're bombarded with all of this stuff of how you're supposed to look. The perfect body, the perfect mate, the perfect Christmas time. There's these car commercials run. There's two commercials they have to write inventory on. One of the car commercials, Christmas time. And it's, guys, it's basically telling us if we don't buy her a brand new Lexus, we're losers. You got the house, perfect snow. The perfect family. You notice the cars have never got snow on them in these commercials? They're driving through the mountains and the cars are touched with snow. Not like if you go outside, the car's got that film of snow. And you got a little red ribbon on. The whole family comes out on Christmas morning and Daddy bought Mommy a brand new Lexus. Now what if I'm a guy who can't afford a Lexus? Maybe I can't afford a car right now. And this commercial goes on. If I'm attached to what other people think I'm supposed to be, I can't watch television. What's that, Kay's Jewelers? You see this one at Christmas? Valentine's Day is coming up. If you don't buy her a ring the size of this big book, you're a loser. And it's always the perfect couple in the most romantic setting. And he gives her the little thingy and the little... Well, what if you're a guy who's out of work? And you want to, you just can't. And this commercial comes on. Let's go rob a bank. Is that what I'm supposed to do? I gotta get stuff. And part of awakening is it's a commercial. I understand what they're doing. But I'm not a slave to that because I'm a servant to God. Rather than claiming I'm a servant to God and being a slave to every fashion, everything, you know, God, if you're on Facebook, every minute is changing. I'm here, no, I'm there. I like this, I don't like that. If no one likes me, if I don't get likes on a page, I'm dead. Imagine living like this. I know a lot of folks who do. Step six, on page 76 is this. If we can answer to our own satisfaction, answer what? The question's on page 75, I've been thorough. The stones are properly in place. Second step stone, third step stone. I let it all out to my sponsor. I look at step six. We've emphasized willingness as being absolutely required, indispensable. Can't do without it. Question one, am I now ready to let God remove from me all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? What's really crazy about this, it says, if we can answer to our own satisfaction, this is right after that hour quiet time. There is no sponsor. There is no home group. It's me and the boss, me and God. And they're telling me, Pete, to your own satisfaction, they're convinced that I have awakened spiritually enough to be honest in this area. And awakened enough to say, nope, I'm still holding on to stuff. I need to go back. To our own satisfaction. Can he now take them all, every one? Well, the first question, if I'm not ready to let God remove from them, I need to pray for willingness. And if that's still not working, maybe I need to go back to step one. And I pray he's a big enough God and powerful enough God and a merciful enough God to take this stuff which is blocking me from him, because I will get drunk if he doesn't. Second question says, can he now take them all, every one? I pray he does. I hope he does. One day after a meditation, I looked at this question completely different. Can he now take them all, every one? So let's use Sean again. So Sean's walking into the group to set up the meeting. And he's got the shades on the one arm, a big coffee pot under the same arm. On the other arm, he's got big books, and he's holding a chair. And he's walking into the room, and everything falls out of his arms. Sean, you want me to help you? No, I got it. Picks up everything again, stumbles along, falls in the snow, everything's all over the place. Sean, you want me to help you with that? No, I got it. Picks up everything again and falls and drops everything. And I say, can I take them now off of you, please? Are you done? I look at the question the same way. Can he now take them out of your hands, please? Because you can't do this. Can he now take them all, every one? Yes, take everything. I can't. I keep falling on my butt. It made perfect sense to me. Can he now take them all, every one? Because you trying to fix this and work on your defects is like trying to swim in the mud. It doesn't work. You don't have the power to do that. You don't know how to do that. God is saying, give them to me. In fact, some of the best, on certain days, the best thing I can give my God is my sinfulness. And he says, give it to me. That's why I'm here. That's as honest as you are today. You've screwed up. Give it to me. That's why I'm here. And once I do that, whatever I bring forth, I will get healed from. Once I do that, he doesn't remember it anymore. He doesn't do like people do, hold on to stuff. I forgive you, but I put it in the bank just in case you do it again. This is the greatness of God. Can he now take them all, every one? So I'm getting ready. The book is positioning me to be made new. I started out in 3 to be made new, and 6, he's pruning the tree a little bit further. Does that mean I'm not going to do 6 and 7 again? No, of course I am. There's been times I did 6, 7, right into 8 and 9, and there's been times where we sat in 6 and 7. Just to be really clear, what's about to happen here, and then go do 8 and 9. But it's a time of prayer. God, I stand ready to be made new. Because in step 7, it says this. When ready, we say something like this. Well, when is ready? When is ready? Is that a little sentence? When ready, say something like, get ready, start, go. When is ready? Take a statement and flip it into a question. When is ready? When I'm no longer holding on to things anymore, when I'm willing to completely let go of everything I think makes me. Because there are defects of character that if I let go of, who will I turn into? The 12 and 12 talks about the hole in the donut. I know this is awful, but it's all I know. And I'm so afraid of becoming something that I don't know, I hold on to what I do know. There's a payoff to some of this stuff. It gets me attention. It gives me a way out. It gives me an excuse. Well, I'm still struggling. I'm still sick with it. Many times the reason why my defects didn't go is because I didn't want them to go. I would tell you this thing's hurting me and it's not working out, but I got a little juice out of it. Yeah. And what will happen to me if it gets completely removed? I think I'm going to become less of a person if God takes it all away. In actuality, we become more authentic, more of service to others, more transparent, and more free. And when I'm free, I'm right with him, which was the goal in the beginning. There's nothing between me and you, and certainly not him and I. And we understand, we come to the aha moment of how broken and flawed we are. With all the great things that we get to do, we understand we have cracks in the armor. It's really okay, because it's the shared brokenness that we identify with each other. Where we begin to get separate from each other is if we look at bank accounts or bank statements and careers. Now we differentiate. Well, you're rich, he's poor. You're a CEO. You're a mailroom guy. There's the differences. But in our brokenness, we all come together. And hopefully in AA, we share in the common solution, which is the big book in God. But how do we identify with each other? When someone tells a story, oh, I drank like that. Oh, I got the same type of fear. Oh, I understand that stuff. Oh, I've been through that. I know exactly. That's why when we say we're alcoholic, we got you ready. We already know your story. Then we begin to tell our stories. We share in that brokenness. That's how we're brought together. The alcoholic and the alcoholism, it bonds us. You too? I did that. I feel the same way. That guy told my story. She told my story. I have the same resentment. I have the same fears. Well, how could you have my fears? How could you have my resentment? How could you have my story? This is my big book. You don't have my big book. You have your own big book. But what we have is alcoholism, and that's what we're identifying with. It showed up in you, and it showed up in me, and we say, same thing with me. It showed up in you with fear, and it showed up with me in fear. It's mine, it's yours, but it's under the umbrella of alcoholism. That's why we get it. It's shared brokenness. So when am I ready? When I'm willing to let God fix this mess once again, because my seven-step prayer is really another extension, another way of looking at the third-step prayer. It says, my creator, I am now, which means now, willing, you should have all of me, good and bad. What I think is good might be bad. What I think is bad might be good. It's not for me to determine. And it's not about me working on a defect and acquiring some asset. That's all self-reliance. But let God do what God's about to do with me. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. So this is about making me a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and spiritually fit to go to work for God, to do his bidding, list in 8, repair the damage of the people I hurt in 9, grow in understanding and effectiveness in 11, and then give the whole thing away in 12. And hopefully have a lot more principles than affairs by the time we get to 12. Mm-hmm. I have principles in which I've been told to live on. I have principles which I live on that I believe in. I have principles that I can't even fathom another way of living. Not perfect. The spirit is perfect. That's untouched. And we get to live in there more than we ever did. And less in the fail system called the mind. And I write an 8-step list of people I've harmed, institutions I've harmed. And I become willing to make amends to every single person on that list. What an order. I can't go through with it, but I'm not going to go do that alone. I'm not going to go out there and make amends alone. I'm not even going to write the list alone. It's God who's leading me and God who's taking me to go make these amends, to repair the damage done in the past. See, when I tell you I'm sorry, I'm looking to be get let off the hook. Hey, I'm really sorry I didn't show up for your party. It's okay, Pete. I feel better. I don't care about you. When I ask you, hey, when I tell you, listen, I need to make amends to you. How come? I told you I was going to come to your party. I never made it. What can I do to make that right? I'm having another party next Sunday. Can you come by? I better be there. Is there anything you need to tell me? Yeah, I thought we were friends. You just didn't show up. I was kind of hurt. I thought you were mad at me. I need to hear that. Isn't it selfish if I stole from you and say, here's your money. Listen, I need to make amends. I stole 20. Here it is. We're even. Take care. That's not amends. I'm just fixing the note that I have out there. Because he's sitting there going, I think I talked about this last night. He's sitting there going, my best buddy stole from me. I stole from my family all the time. My dad says, it was one thing you stealing, because I knew what you were up to. But I never denied you anything. If you came to me, I would have gave you. But you stole from me. My firstborn is stealing from me because I was crushed by it. I had to hear that. To understand the damage I caused trying to live life according to my terms. So I have this list, and my job in step 8 was to pray for willingness to everyone on that list, to go to everyone, regardless of what they were doing with their life, what kind of criminals they were. We're not looking at that yet. We're becoming willing to go, and only God will give me the willingness to do His work. So I prayed for willingness to go to any lengths, willingness to go to any lengths, willingness to make amends. And I began. Some people I made appointments to. Now with social media, you can find just about anyone. Back then it was a little different. And it wasn't even that long ago, but things have changed so much. And I would call people, make appointments. Some people, once you got them on the phone, is, well, what's this about? You know, I had to be spiritually fit enough, and it really depended upon God to do that, because if I'm walking down the block and here comes Joe, and I owe Joe money, or I slandered the guy, or went out with his girlfriend or something, I need to be ready. And so the first time through the work, I probably made in the neighborhood of about 200 direct amends. And a lot of them were financial. And then there were the heavy-hearted ones with the family members, you know, brothers and my grandparents and my dad. They were challenging. And very often I had to go with hat in hand to someone that I really wasn't too thrilled about being there. But I had to. This wasn't any lengths. And it talks about how to approach the man we hated will be arise. Well, arise, I had one of those with a landlord that I trashed the apartment I was renting from him, cursed him out. He cursed me out. We were, you know, bitter enemies. And when I got to step 4 and 5, I realized I trashed his home. I borrowed money and didn't pay it back, and I rarely paid the rent. Almost set the place on fire. And he had a wife, a daughter. His wife was pregnant, and he was going to night school. He was trying to make a life, and then I showed up. And one particular day, I was in a restaurant. I'm sitting at a table, and about 20 feet from me is this guy, eyeballing me from across the restaurant. I had to leave because I was not free. I knew he remembered me and was saying what a dirtbag I was. And so what I had to do was write more inventory, because I didn't want to go to him to make amends, because I was looking at what he did to me, threw me out. Inventory, inventory, prayer, prayer. And then one Sunday morning, here's what happened. I was getting dressed on a Sunday morning. I was putting on a sport jacket and nice clothes. And I had been saving money in an envelope for the back money that I owed him. I saved about $1,000 or something. And I was told to suit up and show up and don't get dressed on an amends like you're gonna commit a felony as soon as it's over. You know, I don't show up with a baseball hat on backwards and gym shorts and, you know, that whole thing. I look like a gentleman, a sober gentleman when I show up. I might be the only copy of the big book he's ever going to read or she's ever going to read. And I'm representing Alcoholics Anonymous, not a rap band. And they let me in when I showed up to his house. And I made financial restitution. And I asked him, is there anything you need to tell me? What can I do to make it right? And then something happened on the way out, which again, you can't see God coming. My car was parked down the corner. So I walk out of these, about 15 steps down onto the sidewalk, and went to the left to get to my car. When I was on the sidewalk, I couldn't feel my shoes touching the concrete. I felt like I was covered or wrapped up in this yellowish white kind of light. And I remember my eyes filling up with tears. It overshot euphoric. I can't even explain what happened. And I wasn't telling myself, oh my God, there's a 9-step promise. I'm having an experience. I can't wait to get to home group and share it. There was no time and space involved. There was nothing. I just was in this other place. I don't remember going into my car, and I can't remember the drive back to my apartment, which was about 20 minutes away. But I remember putting a key in a door, and I was forever changed. What if I didn't go make that amends? God kind of flushed out some poison. And the result of that was way beyond euphoria. Euphoria is not even the right word because we know what euphoria feels like. This is something else. See, if I'm shooting for happiness, I'm never going to get God. If I'm shooting for joy, I'm not going to get God. That's a feeling we all know. Joy is having a lot of money and a pretty girlfriend. I'm happy and joyful. And I have to go to my mother's house, so this is even better. That went nowhere, that joke.
Oh, my God.
Okay. God is something completely different. And until we experience it, do we get it? Yeah? So I start doing like these drive-by men showing up at people, you know, making appointments. And at work, all these guys would congregate at this little diner, these longshoremen and truck drivers. And I was making financial restitution. I made financial restitution and the amends to my family, which really turned out to be a living amends up until currently, living this life for them. And understanding their shortcomings and their defects from time to time and having patience and tolerance and have a whole new design for living. Step 9 was the thing that hooked up the train to the engine. And this whole thing started to evolve. And what's really interesting, one of the byproducts is you make financial amends here and relationships clear up. You fix relationships and finances change. Outlook on life changes. Everything changes. And it was coupled with, on most days, an undercurrent of okayness, even when it's hitting the fan. Just something, I don't know how, and I don't know when, but I'm going to be okay. I'm not going to sink. I'm going to be okay. And I've always been able to land on my feet. It's just the God's armor. There's no gravity in God's world. We just land softly. But I need to depend on God. And there's many things I can't see the road. I think this is not going to go good. Why is God leading me this way? And it's always the way he wants it, divinely inspired. There's a big difference between being called and motivated. Motivated, go to work, I'm going to climb up the corporate ladder. I'm going to get there, and I work hard, I work overtime, do all these things because I'm motivated to own this place. A calling is a place we don't even think about going to, and you can't deny the calling. Because I can be unmotivated too. A calling is a calling, and that's when the soul meets God, and he says, you're going back to church, Peter. And you're going to serve in your church. What? Yes. You're going to give to charities, you're going to feed the homeless, you're going to do things like this. Why? But I'm called, I can't get away from it. It's with me all the time, and it's pure and it feels right. That's calling. And there's tremendous freedom in that. The things we get to experience in the sacred rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, let's have some lunch.